This is Christian Kirk, and you're listening to Roster Watch.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roster Watch Nation, welcome back to the epic Roster Watch podcast brought to you by RosterWatch.com. My name is Alex Dunlap. Happy to be back from lovely Mexico, lovely Cancun. Hate to be away from you guys for a week, but we are back. We're back rocking. I'm joined by Alan Seslowski. You can find him on Twitter at Alan Seslowski. You can find a ton of his content over at RosterWatch.com, where he's been cranking it out on the YouTube channel, up on the website. Everywhere else. Alan, what the hell's going on, brother?
Well, you guys lock me in the basement. You say, don't come up until you have 10 articles. So, you know, what choice do I have?
Yeah, for sure, man. Well, thank God for you while I was out last week. We did mention, you know, that starting out this week, we have the Scott Fishbowl starting. It's post 4th of July. It's time to get ready for the actual... It's time to get into it. People are starting to get serious about fantasy football again. And so happy to be on with you. Moving forward, we're going to have some announcements about the SiriusXM showtimes and when you can expect to hear us back on the radio there at Sirius. Also, at least two podcasts a week, maybe up to three moving forward through August, making sure that you're 100% ready. If you're enjoying it and you want to support the pod, please give us a 5-star rating and a review wherever it is that you listen. And if you watch this on YouTube, you give us a thumbs up over there. We would certainly appreciate it. Leave a comment, subscribe, all that, it's all that nonsense.
If you really want to support the pod, just come on over and be a pro member, man. I mean, this is you guys have more. We have more content there now, more than ever. I mean, that's how you really do support the Roster Watch. Yes, subscribe. Yes, go to the channel, but come over, spend the $4 a month, get all the cheat sheets that you guys put together. That's the best part.
Version 1.5 of the PPR cheat sheet is up. I'm going to have the Superflex stuff coming pretty soon. And then, of course, the standard and half point PPR cheat sheet always comes a little bit later on in July as we can react to some of these ADP changes and stuff. So a bunch of stuff over there. We're going to talk about some of it today. We're going to do a simulation using version 1.5 of the cheat sheet at the end of the pod. We're also going to talk about the running back strength of schedule tool that I put up right before I left on vacation, and go over some breakout players as identified by The Athletic in a recent article that they did. We'll talk about some of those fantasy values and how we're starting to sort of see them shift. But first, Alan had a good topic that I mean, let's just dive in with it. I thought it was interesting. You said, I think a good topic to talk about right now is about how every player in the being taken in the first round of fantasy drafts has something that you kind of need to worry about. I mean, or how did you phrase it to me?
I've never seen this before, that every player in the first round, normally, you know, you're excited when you get a top three pick, you get one of the stud guys. But this year, it seems like every single player has something wrong with them. And you're a little skeptical about it. I mean, even if you take Christian McCaffrey 1-1, he just basically had a catastrophic injury. I know he popped up here and there, and he's the safest. Dalvin Cook, you're worried about an injury history. Saquon Barkley, you're talking about, you know.
Well, let's go through them one by one. Okay, so with Christian McCaffrey, so coming off the injury and also the fact that they have talked about the idea of scaling down his carries, they did draft Chuba Hubbard. They are breaking in an all-new quarterback. They are going to have one of the most terrible defenses in all of the NFL, which generally would hurt game script for a running back. Maybe with a guy like McCaffrey, you don't worry about it quite as much. The offensive line hasn't improved, and he's a guy who with his, you know, there are hardly any running backs in the NFL that can stand up to the type of volume that he's had. And eventually they are going to need to eventually they are going to need to scale him back and protect that investment. So that's what I see with McCaffrey. Is that basically what you identified, just coming off the injury?
Yeah, he's just not the typical 1-1 that we've seen in past years. It's very rare for a running back to have a season ender and then still have be the 1-1 next year. My feeling is because you saw a couple flashes when he came back, even though it was for only one game, he still produced. That's why he's still the 1-1. But he's an atypical consensus 1-1, and he has red flags that you normally don't see in a top overall pick.
And with Dalvin Cook, I don't see quite as much. I feel like Dalvin Cook's probably one of the safer picks. I think that if you look at what the Minnesota Vikings have done on the defensive side of the football, they're going to be better defensively this year. It feels like it. They're getting some key players back. They've made some good additions. I think that they're going to want to run the football. Right. That just seems like Zimmer, he's going to want to get that defense going. He's going to want to run the football. I think we've seen what we've seen with Alexander Mattison, who's felt like he was a threat, at least to bite off some work early on. But it just turns out that Alexander Mattison just isn't. I mean, he's nowhere near Dalvin as far as his playmaking abilities. What is it that you see with Dalvin? I mean, is it just that he's coming off the, you know, he just has an injury history himself?
Yeah, I mean, there's no one that's more ingrained in the offense as a running back than Dalvin Cook. Like, the whole offense basically starts with him. That's what you love about Dalvin Cook. That's why he's the 1.2, right? I mean, last year he had amazing, incredible positive injury luck. But in the past, I mean, if you go back to 2019, right when you needed him most, he carried you all the way to the playoffs and then he missed games. I mean, Dalvin Cook does have a history of missing games. Any running back can get dinged up and miss games. You're just a little bit worried about him with the mileage, and you're a little bit worried about him now he's starting to hit that. It's not so much the age, he's only age 26, but it's the number of carries. Someone else we're going to talk about after, the number of carries, we're going to actually think the other way. He's the exception to the rule, but that's why he's the 1-2. He has the least red flags, but you're not going to be surprised if Dalvin misses a string of games. He has been banged up in the past.
I saw that stat today from FTN data with the truck yards. I guess that's a thing that they came up with, where it's the yards where you've had a man draped on you or something like that. This next guy we're talking about was first in that list. That's Derrick Henry. But Dalvin Cook was right behind him. It just goes to show how good those guys are after contact and how strong they are. Derrick Henry last year, 378 rush attempts, 19 receptions. So teetering right there at that 400 touch.
I mean, Henry over the last
kind of deal.
Yeah, Henry over the last two seasons has averaged around 340 carries, and that's not including those deep playoff runs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I'm just not worried about him. And going back all the way to high school, the guy, we had talked to his high school coach, and they said that after he gave him 50 carries, he wanted another 10. I mean, he might be the outlier, like as close to as durable as Adrian Peterson as we've seen. So you're not as worried about him. And that's why I said, even though Derrick Henry, his ADP is like 6 or 7, and he doesn't get a lot of receptions like you just talked about, I'm still not upset if somebody takes him as high as 3 overall, because you can't win your fantasy league in the first round, but you certainly can lose it. You don't feel like you're going to lose it if you take Derrick Henry.
I mean, Derrick Henry was running back 3 during the regular fantasy, during the fantasy regular season last year in PPR. Like, I mean, he's a very, very, very safe commodity. Clearly, the offense runs through him.
Who do you think are the safest guys? Do you think I would say Derrick Henry is probably the safest guy in the first round.
And that's the same thing that Trashman's always said. He's like, man, if I get one of those early picks, it's like, if Derrick Henry falls to me, I'm taking him, because I just take it. I put that aside. I'm not worried about it. Look, man, if you get busted by injuries or something like that, that's just going to happen. Like, it's just going to happen. You can't plan for it. I mean, to some degree, you kind of can. You can say like, well, this guy's always injured. I'm not going to take him. I don't generally buy into that sort of philosophy. That would have gotten me off of Will Fuller last year, which would have been disastrous. With Derrick Henry, it's like you just take that. It's like Byron says, man, you take those touches and you put high value touches and just put them in the bank. If you want to take risks later on, you can take risks later on.
But it's important what you just said there, because it's not only that you just take those touches and put them in your bank, it's that Derrick Henry doesn't even show up on the weekly injury report. You're never like, oh my God, I have to like wait and make 5 moves before just in case. Like, he's not even on like the Monday, Tuesday, when he's never even questionable. That's what's so
good
about
him. He's going to get to a point soon wherever he starts breaking down, and he's going to be a lot more questionable a lot more of the time. Sure. I don't think the cliff comes this year, though.
That's the point. And in redraft, that's why I think he's a defensible – again, if somebody took him one overall, we're not recommending you do that, but it wouldn't really shock me if somebody took him one overall.
Have you seen him – have you seen his workout tapes, like on Instagram and stuff? Jesus. He's going to beast again this year for sure. Okay, with Alvin Kamara, clearly, I mean, it's obvious. There's just the whole quarterback situation. What happens with the offense in general? Will he get the same number of dump-offs? I think that it's clear to see he won't get the same number of dump-offs in the passing game whenever Drew Brees isn't in there, because Drew Brees and Phillip Rivers both historically kind of connected in weird ways through the Chargers and you know, things that happened there. It's funny that both those guys have become the players that we think about that were just the best with getting these running backs involved in the passing game. And we're not going to have that moving forward for Alvin Kamara. Is that your main level of worry with him?
Yeah, I just think there's a little bit of quarterback uncertainty, like you said. I mean, but he scores touchdowns. I mean, he's had – I think it's
– I mean, like, but 107 targets last year. I mean, who had more targets last year than Alvin Kamara? Anybody? I mean
– right, but he's another guy that's so ingrained in the offense. It's Sean Payton's offense. There's – no matter who the quarterback is, I mean, he's not going to – even if he sees a regression or a lower number of targets, he's still going to have an incredible number. I mean – at least 60 catches, right? I mean, that's well below his career averages, 60 catches. I mean, you could put that in the bank. So who do you think fantasy players should be rooting for if you draft Alvin Kamara? Should they be rooting for Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill to be the quarterback?
Jameis, because for two reasons. One, I think that Jameis is probably going to be more capable of moving the offense. And for two, Jameis is not a threat to Alvin Kamara down at the goal line the same way Taysom Hill is. Taysom Hill will do the zone read stuff. And if that defensive end bites down on Alvin Kamara, he's just going to hold the football and he's going to take it and run outside. Like, I think that would be his first instinct anyway. Taysom Hill sees himself as a baller. Like, he wants the ball in his hands and he wants to make those plays.
Yeah, well, it's really interesting because there is a faction of people on social media who think that Jameis is the locked-in starter, and then there's literally another faction that is convinced it's going to be Taysom Hill. Like, both sides are convinced they're right, and honestly, I'm right in the middle. I have no idea who it's going to be. I think you're right. I'm rooting for Jameis Winston. Which one of those quarterbacks is better from Michael Thomas, do you think?
I don't know. I don't think the Taysom Hill was as bad for Michael Thomas as he was for Alvin Kamara. I mean, Taysom Hill actually showed some good zip on some of those balls to Michael Thomas last year. But we know that Jameis Winston, whenever he gets into a mode where he finds a guy that he knows he needs to feed, the way that he was with Mike Evans, not 3 years ago, where he wouldn't even care that he was throwing interceptions. He just wanted to get it to Evans. I think that he might lock onto Michael Thomas in that similar kind of way. So I think I prefer Jameis for just everything. You know, I agree. Saquon Barkley, whenever we look at him, clearly just coming off injuries, and we know that the offense has added some new weapons, you know, Kenny Golladay, Kyle Rudolph. They actually added, who did they add? Oh, Devontae Booker.
Yeah.
They added Devontae Booker because they, you know, wanted a guy who might be able to help with Saquon Barkley's what's the word I'm trying to think of? Like his reacclimation.
Yeah, they want to kind of ease him in slowly, is what you're saying. And Devontae Booker, he's not a great running back, but he is a professional running back in the NFL. Like he knows how to pick up an offense, he knows how to get himself integrated into the system, and he could help ease Barkley back. And there's no way Barkley's getting a full workload on week one. I'm convinced of that.
Well, Ralph Vacchiano has reported that. Jordan Renan has reported. Like, everybody up there who's on the beat is saying, like, you guys are crazy. they're saying you guys are crazy if you think he's going to come in and just – it's going to be, you know, peak Saquon Barkley volume just to start this season. It doesn't seem feasible. And when you're spending a top pick on a guy, he's going to be in your lineup week one. If he only gets 14 touches, you're going to feel tilted.
What if it's 8 touches? You know what I'm saying? Like, what if they just throwing the ball around a little bit?
Well, then
you
feel epically tilted.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think you could take him at pick 5. Like, okay, so I don't want to slide down our draft order too much, but when you talk about safe picks, Zeke Elliott comes to mind. Everything is went wrong for Zeke after week four last year, and everything's
Let's
right.
talk about with Zeke what it is you're worried about. And what is you're worried about is last year, right? You're worried about last year when the offensive line went to shit. They're getting all the offensive line back, you know, back healthy outside of dudes who've retired and things like that. But you know, the offensive line is back. You worry about Tony Pollard. That team has shown nothing to make me think that they're going to prioritize getting Tony Pollard on the field, despite how good he's looked in Ezekiel Elliott's stead in the past. They paid Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, we all know Jerry Jones runs the show around there. He said that Zeke is this, you know, even with a Dak, even with an Amari, even with drafting CeeDee Lamb, guys like Michael Gallup coming on, Zeke is the straw that stirs the drink. I mean, they love Ezekiel Elliott. Ezekiel Elliott's still young.
Yeah, his new contract kicks in this year. Like, he's starting that new contract now. It's not like he's at the end of a contract. I mean, this is good. This is peak Zeke. You know what I mean? The first four games last year, when Dak was there, he was the RB3 Zeke. I mean, now, like you said, we could tell ourselves a story how everything went wrong and how that's all going to be corrected right now. I mean, at very least, I mean, what is Zeke going to finish a healthy season as, what, RB8, RB7? That's his floor?
Yeah. I think it's his floor. I do. I mean, geez, if you just look at previous years, last year, Zeke Elliott played in 15 games and was not healthy in a bunch of those. Finished with in PPR, what, 12 PPR points per game. It was a miserable season. It was a miserable offensive line.
That's
a good point. If you just look at the games where Dak Prescott was healthy before the offensive line went to complete shit. I mean, you had the 24.7 point game at 18.2, pretty tough one versus Seattle, where he only got 14 attempts in a game that was shot out early on. You remember how bad Seattle was to start last season. That was a 31 to 38 affair, and another huge, just 38 to 49. I forgot about this. A 49 to 38 loss to Cleveland. Only got a 12.5 pointer in that one, but then versus the New York Giants, got back into it with 22.5 fantasy points. After that, things went to shit. Dak got hurt. But Zeke was on pace for, you know, he didn't have another game like he had in that first five game stretch until week 11 at Minnesota, when he got back up to 17 fantasy points. And then just at the very end of the season, whenever he started getting a little bit more volume back in weeks 16 and 17. Yeah, so
in a long season, Alex, like, we have the extra game. Every primary running back is likely going to have a lighter workload at some stretches of the game, just like how the NBA gives them their rest days. There's going to be 12 touch, 14 touch Zeke weeks where Pollard gets 14, 15 touches. You don't mind that. Just expect that. That's going to be with every primary running back this year.
Well, speaking of that, what about Jonathan Taylor? Because, I mean, clearly you have Marlon Mack coming back. You have Nyheim Hines, who's still there, that's going to bite off work in the passing game. I was just looking at targets last year.
Wilkins wasn't bad either, right? Wilkins is decent.
I think Wilkins sucks. I don't worry much about him. But you're right. It's another, like, if we're talking about things to worry about, it's another thing to factor in. And you know, the other thing you got to factor in is that they lost Anthony Costanzo. You know, how often do we just not talk about a team losing its cornerstone left tackle? And how that affects the running game. I mean, goodness gracious. I know that they've consequently made some moves to help buttress that offensive line, but that's a big deal. So is that sort of what you see with Jonathan Taylor?
Yeah. I mean, as you see, we're going down the list here. Every one of these first round picks suck. And again, obviously sucks is a relative term. You know, we've identified so far as Henry and Zeke as having the least of the least worries. So yeah, Jonathan Taylor obviously has the upside to become the RB1, but you just named all the things that I'm worried about. Jonathan Taylor probably should be like the eighth or tenth player off the board. That's why these players that may not have the same upside, Zeke and Derrick Henry, if you're risk averse, you may want to push those guys up. So it's just something to think about. Like, when you're on the clock at four and Barkley's sitting there, Jonathan Taylor's sitting there, and all of a sudden you take like Derrick Henry or Zeke, it just doesn't feel right. But in week six, when those guys are healthy and the other guys are getting, you know, limited carries, it may work out for you.
I love it. I love this conversation. It was a good idea to bring it up. Just a few more of these guys. Aaron Jones is sort of a fringe first round type. I mean, clear. Yeah. We don't need to go into much about that. It's just
the last 2 weeks he's moved down into the second. In all like the money sites, MFL and Underdog, he's actually now he's squarely in. He's like pick 15 now, so okay. he's no longer in the first round. Which again could end up being a value if you draft early because he's great. I would have him like as my fourth or fifth ranked running back if I knew for sure Aaron Rodgers was going to play. But obviously he's not. We don't know for sure.
Cam Akers is just, you know, we've only seen it from him on such a small sample. Yeah. Certainly looked very good. That offense is certainly looking like it's going to take an uptick there with Matt Stafford at the reins for the Rams. Nick Chubb, you worry just about the fact that he's in a 1-2 punch backfield with a top 5 to 10 running back that is his platoon mate in Kareem Hunt. You know, that's always going to be a legitimate source of worry.
He missed games last year. He missed about a four game stretch. So I would actually call Nick Chubb one of the safer guys. There is upside cap on him, you know, because of all the reasons you just named. But because he's going to get 285 carries. I mean, that's like the minimum he'll probably get, and he'll have some touchdown equity. I consider him safe, but he does end up on the injury report, unlike the Zeke and Derrick Henry. Those guys are seldom ever even questionable for the week.
Clearly, just the wide receivers that you would look. I mean, Travis Kelce you could take in the first round, but you always feel it just feels bad taking a tight end in the first round. You know, I think it tied in premium and stuff like in the Scott Fishbowl. I just took Travis Kelce number 4 overall you get points per tight end first downs and all this stuff. I just think about it. Travis Kelce is a cash register in that format, but in just a regular old PPR league, it just feels weird. What about you know, Tyreek Hill sneaks into the first round, Stephon Diggs and Davante Adams sneak into the first round. I think you could probably hilariously. You could feel okay about the Stephon Diggs and Tyreek Hill's situations. You just, you know, with the running back thirst out there, you know, you're passing on a running back. You know, those guys are going to go quick. That would definitely be my worries with them. With Davante Adams, of course, we have the same issue with Aaron Jones. We don't know if Aaron Rodgers is going to be there. Aaron Rodgers just yesterday would decline to specify whether he was planning on being the week one starter for the Green Bay Packers. So what do you think about those three before we move on to the next topic?
Yeah, if you for years, I mean, you've been playing fantasy for decades. The move, if you're picking at like the 12 spot, is to take the two best receivers after everyone's taken the running back. So even though there's a huge running back thirst, you need to pivot to the wide receivers if you're picking at like 11 or 12 and just take two of the best guys. And then, you know, you get into the Miles Gaskin sort of tier in the next couple rounds.
Do you know what I can do? That's a good point. And I think right now what I can do is just run a simulation here using the cheat sheet. Okay. And I'll show you how it
pick from 12.
If we pick at 12, we'll probably get Tyreek and Diggs or something similar to that. So we'll just see if maybe we can just do that and just we'll prove to you his point here, because it looks shaky. It does look shaky at first.
Yeah.
It looks shaky at first, and sometimes it won't completely shake out for you, but let's just see here. So look, it's already picked at 12, just a regular setup, snake draft, 12 team league, a PPR deal, one quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, one tight end and two flex. We'll draft against the average draft.
Before you do that, make it three receivers. I think I think the mainstream, even home leagues, are starting to go with three receivers, and that'll help. That'll actually help us more, I think. I mean, again, just to kind of test it, where you actually need the receivers. That'll make it more challenging because other teams are going to try to take receivers too.
Okay. Well, yeah, I can change it. Generally, I like to. It's been tested on these parameters, so we'll see how we'll see how it works. If things go sideways, that'll be why. So the composite ADPs would be from Fantrax, NFL.com, and NFL.com has just now been added. Their ADPs, RT Sports Fantasy Football Calculator, also the composite best ball ADPs from across the industry. Also getting put in here will be the expert rankings at Fantasy Pros. We'll be drafting against the Yahoo pre-draft rankings, ESPN pre-draft rankings, and NFL.com. Pre-draft ranking. So basically any resource that your league mates are going to be using against you is baked in here. We use version 1.5. This was test 6 I did yesterday.
Fantasy Pros has calibrated, because I've been using this simulator for like at least 6 or 7 years, and they've really calibrated this thing to work to work well. So it does give you a real look.
It's a fantastic simulator.
Yeah. The app on the phone works great too. When I'm on the toilet, I do a quick simulation on my phone using the cheat sheet.
Okay. Well, so we do, so what we're going to get here is we're not going to get two wide receivers unless you just wanted to deviate from the cheat sheet.
Yeah. Let's just force it for the sake of it.
Okay. Yeah. So we'll test the theory and we'll go Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins.
That's the way. That's how I would do it.
Okay, so we'll take Stephon Diggs. I mean, if it were me, I would take Stephon Diggs and Cam Akers. But
right, and I agree with you there. I totally agree. We're just doing an experiment. This is the time to experiment, like before we get to August.
Okay, so let's just start out with these two wideouts, and let's see how we can do here. So that'll leave us to where we can basically next. We're going to get a Chris Carson here at the end of the third, which to me is just always seems like such a screaming deal.
And Montgomery.
But if we go with the cheat sheet, it'll be Amari Cooper. Are you saying that you don't want to do the cheat sheet?
We can do that. That's fine. I was just trying to do an experiment to see what happens when you do the wide receiver. Because like you said, the cheat sheet would never tell you to take wide receiver there when Cam Akers is on the board. So already we're off the rails. This is like an avant-garde experiment we're doing here.
Let's see if we do it here with David Montgomery. We'll see how that works. The cheat sheet up next would say, and so look, I mean, if you want to keep going with running back, you could go with Kareem Hunt here at the very end of the fifth round. That's what the sheet says. Cortland Sutton and Chase Edmonds will be right after that, and they're ranked at the same spot. So let's just take Kareem Hunt here.
Yeah.
Maybe should we keep it?
We get two
balanced
picks.
And get. No, this is the next pick. Should we keep it balanced and go with Sutton, or should we go with another? Running back in Edmonds, but I think since we're going three wideouts, we should go with Sutton here.
And I agree there. Sutton's undervalued right now. The first good camp report on him, up he goes, right?
Look at this shit. Okay, so the only things we really changed here were we took David Montgomery and we reached for David Montgomery on the sheet. We reached for DeAndre Hopkins on the sheet by only two slots. And then this looks good. We'll just go with the cheat sheet here because Trey Sermon, we're going to talk about this in just a little while, but why I'm much, much higher on him. Now we have a choice between Antonio Brown and Damian Harris. Damian Harris is another guy who we're going to talk about really shortly, why I'm a lot higher on him. But I think Antonio Brown is a good play here. And, you know, since we are starting three wide receivers, maybe Antonio – what do you think? Do you want to go Antonio Brown or Damian Harris?
I don't think Damian Harris has as much ups. I like him, but I'm worried about his touchdown equity with Cam there, and I'm worried about the PPR stuff. So Antonio Brown, to me, has an equal chance to produce as much as Mike Evans or as Chris Godwin, and he's going four rounds later.
We already have, in this simulation, we already have four running backs in a league where I only have to start two running backs, where I need to start three wide receivers and a flex.
Yeah, Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown. And also, I feel like during this process, we might get a shot at – Gus Edwards and or Tony Pollard here Gus Edwards and possibly Tony Pollard.
See, so that's
here
we go. That's you knowing the pool. That's amazing. Yep. See, that's when you do enough of these simulations. You learn the pool so well.
Yeah, so that's what we'll just go ahead and do here. We'll take Gus Edwards and we'll take Tony Pollard. And then I know what's going to happen. I'll tell you what happens next is we're going to end up – maybe Mike Williams will end up falling. If Mike Williams doesn't end up falling, we'll get Mecole Hardman, who there's been buzz about. We'll get Nelson Agholor, who there's been buzz about, especially with N'Keal Harry. Now we're requesting a trade out of New England. So we'll finish up with these. We'll finish up. So it'll be Mecole Hardman and Nelson Agholor.
By the way, what team is going to trade for N'Keal Harry? and like, what are they going to give up for him? A conditional seventh?
If I were a GM, I'd give up a conditional seventh for that dude any day of the week, man. I would do it any day. Just get him out. Give him a new lease on life. Let's take Mecole Hardman. Let's take Nelson Agholor here. We're going to get a quarterback. We've waited way too long on quarterback here, so we'll probably just end up going with somebody like, you know, you could go with Trey Lance or Trevor Lawrence. I think picking Trevor Lawrence here in this spot, Trey Lance is built in here to be your second quarterback. Generally, a quarterback will have gone earlier, but since we don't have a starting quarterback, I'm going to go with the guy who I know is starting in week one and go with Trevor Lawrence. And then we'll get Adam Trautman at tight end, who's going to be a huge breakout anyway. That team, using the cheat sheet where we only did a little experiment at the very beginning, with, and you know, I could have gone Baker Mayfield there. Maybe I should have gone Baker Mayfield.
You know, Baker Mayfield was a top five QB over that last month of the season. It's unbelievable. I think people are undervaluing him in these drafts. I mean, in one QB, you don't need to value him, but in Superflex, man, you just got to go get him.
Picking at the 12 hole here in this simulation where Alan and I did a bit of an experiment. We reached a little bit on DeAndre Hopkins where we probably should have taken Cam Akers or, I mean, maybe Austin Eckler would have been the best pick. We could have taken either of those guys. We decided to reach on DeAndre Hopkins just to see how a Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins start would look and whether or not we could pull through with good enough running backs. We got Chris Carson. The cheat sheet then told us we could either we could take one of the Cowboys wide receivers, or if we wanted to slightly reach, we could take David Montgomery and secure that RB2, which is what we did. We ended up, after that, we just used the cheat sheet just as completely by the rules. The quarterback in this one is Trevor Lawrence. The running backs are Chris Carson, David Montgomery, Kareem Hunt, Trey Sermon, Gus Edwards, Tony Pollard. The wide receivers are Stephon Diggs, DeAndre Hopkins, Cortland Sutton, Antonio Brown, Nyko Hardman, and Nelson Agholor. The tight end is Adam Trautman. To me, that is an excellent draft. Whenever Fantasy Pros gives you a grade of a C, you know that
that's good.
You know that you're on to something, right? You know,
right. When they give you an A, it's when you have, that's the one thing they need to fix. Cause the word is out there. When you get an A from Fantasy Pros, it didn't go well.
It's no good. It's too strong.
It's on its head. They literally just need to take their algorithm and spin it upside down.
Yeah. So we'll do another sim maybe here at the very end where we don't do the weird experimentation.
The 2021 Roster Watch cheat sheet is available now at rosterwatch.com. The revolutionary cheat sheet to change fantasy football forever is back, only at rosterwatch.com. Winning fantasy players don't use outdated magazines or expensive draft software that's impossible to navigate. The Roster Watch cheat sheet. All you have to do is follow three simple rules. That's it. Three rules. Guys, it couldn't be easier. The Roster Watch cheat sheet. An expert quality draft is guaranteed as long as you follow the rules, the three simple rules that a toddler could follow. The sheet is magical, it's mystical, it is mythical. It is the Roster Watch cheat sheet, only at rosterwatch.com.
I wanted to get into this next subject. Again, a meaty edition of the podcast, a lot to get to after we've sort of been off for a week. We appreciate you guys joining us. If you're enjoying the pod, please take a minute, give it a rating and a review in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is that you listen. Okay, so breakout players. Let's just go through these teams. The Miami Dolphins, we have Josh Tolentino from the Miami beat there for The Athletic, saying that, of course, Tua has a lot to prove after this season, but the team has expressed confidence in Myles Gaskin, who led with 584 rushing yards and 3 touchdowns despite only playing in 10 games. If he can stay healthy, Miami has shown it's willing to give him a heavy workload. With a fully loaded wide receiver core, Gaskin will have the green light in the backfield to take off. You mentioned it earlier, man. He's a real life preserver of a running back in that fifth, sixth round. If you get a little bit woolly at the beginning and want to take some of those running backs or some of those wide receivers that didn't fall for us with Myles Gaskin, I know you could probably feel like you want to take a victory lap. You've been on the Myles Gaskin train since the very you've been on it, dude.
What a train to be on, huh? The Gaskin train.
Yeah, I don't know about. Well, it's good to be on right now.
Yeah,
and I feel like we're getting a good amount of him in simulations because he just is presenting a terrific value. He's in that pocket with Travis Etienne that for late fourth through the fifth and sometimes into the sixth round, you can get these guys.
Yeah, I just don't think when you draft Myles Gaskin, because he is a hyped player right now. And yes, thank you for saying that. We've been talking about him since January, but he's not going to be an RB1. I don't see him being like RB9, 10, 11, and 12. I could see him being like RB like 15, 16, 18, which is great for your fantasy team, right? You know, you're getting 12 to 13 fantasy points every week. You don't have to think about it. Maybe one week you get 18. Just don't expect him to like win your league for you. It's just that when we were drafting him in those early best balls, he was going in the eighth round. I mean, and he's still worth where he's going now in the fourth. So yeah, of course I like Gaskin. He wasn't good on the goal line last year. And obviously he proved he wasn't durable enough to hold it down the whole season. But how can you – I mean, in the fourth round, there's no better pick at running back.
I think in the fifth too, man.
Yeah,
I mean,
fifth, wherever you're getting
the fifth, like, I mean, he finishes running back 13 last year in PPR leagues.
And per game, right? On a per game basis.
Well, right. I always talk about things.
Well, that's part of his, that's why he's in the fifth round is because he didn't hold up. He's a little bit undersized. And again, so yeah, when he's there, he's going to be fine. I'm just meant like overall, he's never going to be like that league winner. But he did have, what, like a 35-point finish last week of the season, something like that?
Yeah, man. Let's see. So as we scroll down here in the AFC East, the New York Jets, Connor Hughes reporting, they couldn't believe that Elijah Moore was there in the second round of the draft. He's been one of the best players of offseason workouts. It's a crowded wide receiver room. They have Corey Davis. They have Jamison Crowder. They have Denzel Mims, who's kind of ailing. They have Keelan Cole. But it's going to be impossible to keep Elijah Moore off the field. I was a little bit disappointed in that last simulation that we weren't getting him because I believe yesterday in version 1.5, I was getting Elijah Moore in 62% of the simulations with the 14th pick before kicker and defense. So we're getting a lot of him. I don't know how much longer he's going to stay affordable there in that 14th round. I think we'll try and stay a little bit ahead of ADP, though, just because how much we loved him as a prospect and how much it seems like he's taken to this NFL deal like a duck to water.
Yeah, good call by Byron and you and Trashman. I mean, you guys were talking about Elijah Moore before the NFL draft, saying that it's like, don't be shocked if he goes in the first round. Obviously, the Jets got him pretty early in the second round. You know what you love about him is that he went to Ole Miss with DK Metcalf and AJ Brown, and they were both stupidly drafted in the second round, and now another player that comes out the next year is pushed into the second round. It just seems like those guys are following a similar pattern, and it's going to surprise nobody at this point. I had a friend come to me yesterday and say, hey, I think Elijah Moore is going to be a breakout. I said, okay, what's your next revelation, that the sky is blue? It's like, welcome to the party, buddy. I mean, I just love that you guys identified him way earlier than this.
Baltimore Ravens, we have Jeff Zrebeck reporting that, look, the Ravens believe that J.K. Dobbins is capable of more. They want to get him more involved in the passing game. They love Gus Edwards, and they'll stick with the running back by committee, but they do expect Dobbins to be more of a focal point this year. Clearly, Dobbins just an us. I mean, coming out, he reminded me of like a Larry Johnson level talent. He's going to be terrific in the pass game. I've seen him. I mean, the guy's from right down this street. You know, like he's, you know, I've seen him live from going back when he was in high school. Where was he? Dripping Springs, LaGrange, somewhere just east of town, east of Austin here, where I'm kind of based out of. Look, man, he's a dynamo. He's ridiculous. I think that you worry a bunch about Gus Edwards, and I think the Gus Edwards right now presents the better value in fantasy when he's a guy like you just saw. We can take, you know, in the 9th, 10th round of these drafts, we have to take J.K. Dobbins. He's sliding a little bit to where you take
right
more
to round three. I mean, where else are you going to get a lead running back on a good offense in round three?
On a run first offense as well.
Right. And look how he finished the season. One of my favorite fantasy football strategies, I've talked about this with you before, is that I like to see players that, you know, maybe got off to a slow start and then look what they did like the last 6 weeks. I mean, he scored a touchdown in every week. As soon as they relegated Mark Ingram to the bench, it was really focused on J.K. Dobbins. The PPR upside is going to be limited, but you're getting him in the third round. In those rare leagues that we play in where there's third round reversal, if you do take the two receivers on the 1-2 turn and you pick early in the third round, J.K. Dobbins is an auto smash there. You have your running back one.
The Indianapolis Colts. I can't believe this. It's music to my ears. I'm sure it'll be music to your ears. We have Zach Kiefer, who covers the team closely, saying that our guy, he believes in Paris Campbell the same way that GM Chris Ballard says, I believe in Paris Campbell, the same way that Roster Watch believes in Paris Campbell. He says he could become a consistent weapon of the Colts passing attack as a speedy threat who could take quick throws and pile up yards after the catch. It's a big year for him, and it starts with staying healthy. What Paris Campbell is quoted as saying is, one thing I've learned through all this, it's not what you do in your first 2 years. It's who can last the longest. So Paris Campbell feels like he can last. He knows he's still there. He has the support of Frank Reich, who Zach Kiefer says has big, quote, big plans for him this year. He has the support of his GM. He has the support of all of Roster Watch Nation. We love our Golden Sun, Paris Campbell.
Yeah, I mean, the price is right on him too, right? You don't have to spend any significant draft capital in your redraft.
I need to move him up on the cheat sheet.
Yeah, in the SiriusXM host draft, we proactively reached up and got him, and we're going to have, I think he's like our wide receiver 6 in that league. We're going to dominate that.
I might rather even have him than Nelson Agholor. I'm going to make a move there with him. He needs to at least be in that pocket.
When you're drafting that late, those are the guys you're going to cut first. I mean, the minute the hot free agent comes up, if Nelson,
here's the thing, you wouldn't have cut Paris. We had Paris Campbell last year. If he would have gotten hurt, you wouldn't have cut him. He looked good in that first half of that first game, but it was just, you know, it was like his season was cut. What, he only made it to game 2, right? So it was he could have not even made it out of the second half of game 1. I mean, but he certainly had Paris Campbell. And think about a new quarterback. Like he could be a guy like Carson Wentz's best friend, especially how Carson Wentz had that connection over the middle and over those drag routes and stuff like that with the Zach Ertz's of the world. That's where Paris Campbell can operate, but he's got some speed to him.
Yeah, and there's no tight end to think of. Like usually on a team where there's a tight end that could soak up, 80 targets, that's fine. But there's literally no tight end on Indianapolis.
I was just reading today. Well, they did draft Kalen Granson, who came from Westlake High School, my alma mater. He went to SMU. Mm-hmm. They also still have Mo Alie-Cox, but they've said with Jack Doyle, expect him to be used as a blocker much more this year. Is they're trying to get Eric Fisher there to take over for Anthony Costanzo, and they're just going to need Doyle a lot more in the run game.
Yeah, that's exactly what you want. You want like just a bunch of names on jerseys with no one that's going to command more than 25 or 45 targets for the year.
The Jacksonville Jaguars, the obvious answer would be Trevor Lawrence, of course, but the reporter here says that instead, you should look at Travis Etienne. He says that he was the second pick in the first round at number 25. And Urban Meyer hasn't been shy about his goals for Etienne as a dual threat out of the backfield. He just says, don't be surprised if he breaks out as a complete, completely breaks out, just as a complete epic superstar. they're high on Travis Etienne down in Jacksonville.
Yeah, I mean, this was Urban Meyer's, the obvious pick at number 1 was Trevor Lawrence. Then that wasn't really a draft pick. This was his first decision he had to make as a Jacksonville Jaguars head coach. Everybody would have picked Lawrence at 1. He made a he actually jumped up. Nobody thought he was going to take ETN there, So it's interesting. He's going to want to prove that pick was right. I love the price on him too. Isn't he going like in the 5th round of a lot of these drafts?
Yeah. Yes. The 4 it's that pocket. Like once Josh Jacobs goes, it's going to be you start looking at ETN, you start looking at guys like Mike Davis, you start looking at guys like Miles Gaskin, and then if you have to, you start falling a little bit farther than that, that's when you start having to look at the Kareem Hunts and the Chase Edmonds, and maybe you could take a stab at Javonte Williams, and then a little bit later than that, you have a little pocket of reserve players and Trey Sermon and Damian Harris, and then you have your little pocket with your Gus Edwards and your Tony Pollards if you get into real, real trouble. But that's a key pocket right there. The ETN, Mike Davis, Miles Gaskin sort of tier.
That can win you the league, though. ETN's the only one of those names that you said that could literally finish as the RB1.
Yep, and that's why he should be considered by everybody, us included, there at the very top of the tier. How about this one? You'll never guess this. For the Tennessee Titans, Joe Rexroad is saying that Darrington Evans is an afterthought in the Titans offense at this point, but that may not be the case a few weeks into the season. 2020 third rounder out of App State. He's got the explosiveness to be the great change of pace for Derrick Henry, but he had a nagging hamstring injury last year. We know that kept him out the whole season. He's looked really good catching balls in the spring, according to Rexroad. He says if he gets better in pass protection, he could be another beneficiary of the fact that they have Derrick Henry, they have A.J. Brown, they have Julio Jones, just as a dude who can be an auxiliary option, who is dynamic in space. I mean, we know what Darrington Evans can do. His college highlights are human joystick. Like, what do you think? That's not a name that I've heard very much of, or I haven't really thought much about Darrington Evans at all, but I think it's interesting.
At risk of sounding like our own resident trash man, I think the backup to own in Tennessee is Brian Hill. And let me explain just briefly why. And again, everything you said about Darrington Evans is correct. Like, you pick him with the last pick of your draft, and if it doesn't go well, you just cut him. But Brian Hill kind of profiles as the one-to-one replacement. So if you're into like the handcuffing thing or the backup that profiles a little bit more like Henry, and let's say the unthinkable happens, I'm not saying you should draft Brian Hill, but if you're in one of those deep dynasty leagues where he's on the waiver wire, pick him up. And there's no doubt that Brian Hill is going to be like the top waiver ad 1 week in the first month and a half of the season. If they decide to give, if it's like announced, hey, we're going to sit Derrick Henry, just give him a game off. That's going to happen with a lot of the primary ball carriers. I could see if Tennessee's 4-2 or 6-1, they say, hey, we're going to rest Derrick Henry this week. So I would just keep an eye on Brian Hill, but I like everything you said about Evans.
The Denver Broncos beat reporter Nick Kosmider here in this article for The Athletic identified Jerry Jeudy, the number 15 pick in the 2020 NFL draft, is a guy who he pegs to break out. Courtland Sutton, of course, returning from the ACL injury. You know, there's quarterback stuff going on, but I've been seeing the workout videos of Jerry Jeudy getting open. You forget, just with the bad drops last year and stuff, you forget what a route running savant he is. Nick Kosmider saying that Jeudy should have more freedom in the middle of the field to turn his precise route running ability into more game changing plays. Your thoughts on Jeudy? Are you finding yourself getting a good amount of him, or is the quarterback situation there in Denver just completely turning you off to the passing game options?
Yeah, I'm not as afraid of the quarterback situation as the market is. And, you know, just think about this. Like, where would we be drafting Jerry Jeudy if it was announced that Aaron Rodgers was the quarterback there, right? So he would move up. He would go from like the sixth round to like the third round, or like the definitely the early fourth round. So you see the upside with Jeudy. I'm with you. I mean, he had a couple bad drops last year. He looked pretty good for a rookie, and then he had that big look with that 90-yard touchdown towards the end of the season. That was enough for me. I'm with you. I want to try to proactively draft him. You're going to have to choose between him and Courtland Sutton, because those guys are usually going in the same round, the same five picks. So if on the clock and they're both there, who do you think you'll click the button on? If you know, in your money leagues,
me,
yeah,
Courtland Sutton,
yeah.
I mean, I've already seen Courtland Sutton be a complete alpha. I liked Jeudy better as a prospect than I like Courtland Sutton, and maybe with Courtland Sutton, that's probably, you know, it's my reflex to say Courtland Sutton, but I think that you could probably make a good case for Jeudy as well. Those guys should be a little bit closer together on the cheat sheet than
Judy's got the better draft capital, right? He was a first round pick. Courtland Sutton was a second round pick. Yeah. I know that's kind of just picking things that for the case for Jeudy, but it is a fact.
Yeah. For the Kansas City Chiefs, we have Nate Taylor here reporting for The Athletic that Mecole Hardman looks like he's set to come into the season as the wide receiver too. All our sneaky picks are just getting busted on here.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Alan, Sammy Watkins is now gone. We know famously that Mecole Hardman has struggled. I forget who it was who was talking about his specific struggles versus man coverage in his first two NFL seasons. But, dude, he does come in as the number two wide receiver for these guys. It's a Patrick Mahomes-led offense. He's got legit game-breaking speed at a Tyreek Hill level. I love taking Mecole Hardman late in these drafts, round 12, round 13.
I mean, when they drafted him, it was a known thing that he was going to be a project. Like, he wasn't even like an offensive player. They were deciding in college if he was going to be a defensive back, right, or an offensive player. So it was a known thing that he was going to be a third or fourth year breakout. And then we just wanted it so bad the first 2 years. And when it didn't happen, that soured a lot of people on him. And his price is right. I mean, he's what, an 11th, 12th round pick? I mean, you're deciding between players like him and Bryan Edwards, you know, both guys with upside. So I was a little lower on Mecole until I heard you guys make the case not too long ago. I mean, this blurb is only going to push his ADP up to like the 9th or 10th round. So yeah. If you want him, you better get him, because the first Twitter highlight reel catch he has, it's he's going into the 8th or the 7th.
Philadelphia Eagles beat reporter Zach Berman saying that he predicts the very obvious, that Dallas Goedert's taking over as the number one tight end next season. He went as far as to say that a Pro Bowl bid isn't out of the question. And we know that Zach Goedert, we've loved him ever since we saw him for just one part of one practice at the Senior Bowl, but just getting to be around that guy, interviewing him, seeing his body shape and body type, and, you know, just seeing what he was able to do in college. I forget where he went. Did he go to South Dakota State? Something. I think it was South Dakota State. So a small school, but just a completely dominant performer there. I start to look at the cheat sheet and I wonder, should we be taking Dallas Goedert? Should we be taking Dallas Goedert above Logan Thomas? I kind of think
probably, yes.
Think so, yeah.
Yes, I would say yes. I think that, you know, Dallas Goedert's ADP is right after Kyle Pitts, TJ Hockenson, and Mark Andrews. He usually goes right around there. So I don't think this news is going to change his ADP that much. It's just like it was already baked in that he was going to be the tight end one from the best ball market. It's time. I mean, we've been waiting for a couple of years for Dallas Goedert. Wait till Dallas Goddard's the starting one, tight end one. All right, this is it. I mean, it shouldn't cost you more than a late sixth, early seventh round pick to find out. And, you know, I've heard some smart fantasy analysts saying stay out of that tight end pocket, but I think Dallas Goedert has as good a chance as any to be considered in the top tier next year. So I like playing in that little area of tight end.
For the football team, it's like, this is crazy to me. We got Ben Standig, who is legit one of their best beat guys there for the Washington football team. And to me, Antonio Gibson already broke out, but he's saying that there is more to come. He's saying that it was a lackluster offense last year. They didn't find the end zone frequently. They ranked 25th in scoring. They cycled through four quarterbacks. Now Ryan Fitzpatrick's under center. There's better playmakers. He says, and his quote is, an experienced version of Gibson is ready to run his game up even another level.
I don't want to embarrass you on this and make you blush, Alex, but I think that it warms my heart when people in the industry that aren't even associated with Roster Watch call out Roster Watch and give them credit for discovering Antonio Gibson, almost like you've birthed him for fantasy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's two players. I mean, there's many players, but there's two players that really are signature calls by Roster Watch. Antonio Gibson's one of them. Cooper Kupp was the other. I mean, there's so many, but those seem in the last 5 years to be the two that people remember, like on regular terrestrial mainstream radio. I've heard people talk about it. It's unbelievable. Yes, I agree with the call. I'm taking Antonio in like the leagues where I have good money on the line. I'm picking at pick 10, 11. I'm not going to be bashful. I might actually take Antonio Gibson in round one.
Do you take him before Joe Mixon?
Yes, that's an easy call for me.
That's a tough call for me.
Yeah, so, I mean, I understand why, but for me, I just... We've seen a few seasons of it. The offensive line in Cincinnati doesn't look like it's improved that much. And if I'm wrong, I'm not going to be that wrong. Whereas I'm wrong the other way, and Antonio Gibson's the RB1 overall, I'm going to literally want to jump out of off my my balcony.
Yeah, the Detroit Lions. We know that they're RB1, despite the fact that he's called the B running back by new run game coordinator Anthony Lynn is DeAndre Swift. We have Nick Baumgartner predicting DeAndre Swift as the breakout player, even despite Jamal Williams' arrival in Detroit. He's just saying that, look, he even says a little bit of fantasy stuff here. So here's what Nick Baumgartner says. He's not sure this combination will affect Swift's fantasy value, but if you're in a points perception league, he could turn a corner there too. He has the ability to be a three down back. This could be the year that we see him show it. I don't think you can justify taking DeAndre Swift off the field all too often for Jamal Williams.
Can we give this beat writer a round of applause real for acknowledging
for catering to fantasy?
Well, just knowing who reads his articles. The 25 people that read his article from Detroit, and then there's the 25,000 outside of analysts in the country that read his article because of it. Yeah, that's good acknowledgement right there. So we'll give him props. Yeah, now I'm higher on DeAndre Swift than I think the market. I don't see why he can't be a first up.
He's slipping. He's slipping in drafts. I had to move him down the cheat sheet because I was like, when I was running simulations on version 1.5, I was getting him. If using version 1.4 after I got back from vacation after only a week, I don't know what happened, but I was getting DeAndre Swift in over 60% of simulations. I said, well, that's just too much exposure to DeAndre Swift. Not that I don't want him, but I don't want him to be in 60% of our users, you know, drafts. I feel like that's probably betting a little bit too, you know. I like him, but boy, I don't want to bet on the come that much.
Yeah, and especially because of the team context, it's a bad team. But, you know, the way I answer that question is that if they're a bad team and they're trailing, I mean, Jared Goff is – he made Todd Gurley's best pass-catching season, right? It was Jared Goff that was throwing him the football. So I could see a situation where DeAndre Swift – I mean, if you told me his under-over for receptions was 70, I'm taking the over. I mean, and that's a high number, right? I mean, there's no – and that's – and what we know from fantasy football is that a reception is twice as good or probably more than a carry. So even if DeAndre Swift is like 8 or 9 carries a game, if he's getting 8 targets a game, 7 targets a game, he's going to be a first round pick in 2022.
When we look at the next one down here, the Green Bay Packers, we have Matt Schneidman from The Athletic reporting. Another roster watch favorite, dude, one of our favorites. The breakout player will be wide receiver return specialist Amari Rodgers, the rookie third-round pick out of Clemson, a true golden son of roster watch, a complete standout from the Senior Bowl. He expects him to, you know, step in as the natural slot wide receiver and also serve as a gadget piece out of the backfield. It makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah, I mean, that could end up being part three of the Golden Sun trio I talked about, right? When you and Byron came back from the Senior Bowl, your eyes were popping out when I saw the big smiles and you're talking about Amari Rodgers.
Yes.
You and I actually had a debate in our rookie draft when it was Dynasty rookie season, Amari Rodgers or Amon-Ra St. Brown. I was advocating for Amari Rodgers then.
You were. Yep.
Yeah, and I'll stay with that now. I think
you were telling me, Alex, listen to your own self.
Right.
Listen to your own self. You love Amari Rodgers. What the hell's wrong with you?
It was
like the Podfather on the radio show last year when I was doing these simulations and I wasn't getting any Terry McLaurin. And he's like, Alex, you love Terry McLaurin.
Yeah.
I love Terry McLaurin. Do I need to remind you that you love Terry McLaurin?
Yeah, my take on him was based on your analysis at the Senior Bowl. So you were having an argument with yourself that day.
Yeah. Minnesota Vikings, we have Arif Hassan, friend of the show, saying it's gonna be Irv Smith Jr. Like there's not a clear third wide receiver on the roster. The Vikings famously put their tight ends on the field more than any other team. It makes all the sense in the world. Irv Smith was a great prospect coming out. It sucks when you're battling for targets behind Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen, but there truly is just a complete void there as far as a third option.
Yeah, I mean, you just said it. The tree is so narrow there that it's not going to take much for Irv Smith to make his value. I mean, he was one of my favorite tight ends. I think you guys were propping him up that year. He came out with OJ Howard and in that class. He's so cheap. If you're going to play the wait on tight end game, he's going to be the target, right? I mean, he's the one you want to take the first dart on in like the 9th round.
I would wait later than that.
Is he going the 11th?
Yeah, something like that. And I know in best ball it's different than
it's different because people get two. Right.
Well, because you can't pick up and you can't pick up tight ends. Right. You can't play the tight end waiver wire. But in redraft, you can get him more like the 11th. And if you don't get him there, you can always get Adam Trautman. And so that's a good fallback too.
Get them both.
certainly. The Atlanta Falcons, this is interesting. We have Torrey McElhaney saying that the players who stand the most to gain, while everybody else is talking about Calvin Ridley and Kyle Pitts, are Russell Gage and Hayden Hurst. I mean, to me, that doesn't sound too exciting for fantasy because I don't think any of those guys are going to be anything that makes any real change for your roster. But do you have any interest in Gage or Hayden Hurst? Maybe Hayden Hurst if you're just getting a huge pickle at tight end or if you're in a tight end premium league.
Yeah, the case for Hayden Hurst is pretty simple, is that, you know, if when they traded Julio, they're going to make Kyle Pitts the de facto wide receiver. That's the narrative, right, that we're watching. And if that's the truth, then new head coach Arthur Smith was a tight end guru over at Tennessee. So then that connects to Hayden Hurst, who they paid a second round pick for, by the way. And it was funny. I look back, a friend of Roster Watch, our friend Cody Carpentier, pointed out to me that pick that they gave up to get Hayden Hurst, that second round pick, the Ravens went ahead and drafted J.K. Dobbins. So in a bizarro world, J.K. Dobbins would be a Falcon right now.
Cody Carpentier, our good friend from over at playerprofiler.com and Roto Underworld Radio, of course, man. We got some good friends and some brothers over there. Okay, two more, Alan, and one of these is going to segue into this last quick segment that we'll do.
Sure.
For the Arizona Cardinals, we have Lindsey Jones saying that, like, it's easy to peg Rondale Moore, right? But It's rare for a rookie wide receiver to explode, and instead this could finally be Christian Kirk's time to shine as the complement to DeAndre Hopkins. He's a better number two option than A.J. Green. He can play from the slot. He has, already has known chemistry with Kyler Murray. It's beyond time for that to carry over onto the field. What do you – I mean, a Christian Kirk truther covering the team here, Lindsey Jones, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Roster Watch has always been high on Christian Kirk. He's been a player that someone in the room always likes him better than I do, so I never get him. I'm never against a player. I did get him in one best ball. It's like I'm dubious. I'm skeptical. It's not going to cost you a lot to find out. It wouldn't surprise me if it happens. But if you're asking me, I'm going to bet against it in any league that means something to me. I'm probably going to pass, but I'm okay being wrong. And you know what? I can see the case and why. Where are you guys? Because you were early on Christian Kirk. We saw a few flashes.
Oh, Trash. I mean, Trash Man loves him. And Mike Evans told Trash. Mike Evans told Trash Man that Christian Kirk can be as good as Odell Beckham.
He has been the last 2 years, right?
Well, probably, yeah. All right. And here's the last one for the 49ers. Pretty easy here. Matt Barrows, though, was saying, you know, Trey Sermon's going to be atop the depth chart. With Wilson, you know, being out, Raheem Mostert, he was out with a minor knee sprain. So Trey Sermon was taking the number one reps there in camp and should basically stay as part of that. Matt Barrow saying that the 49ers aspire under new running backs coach Bobby Turner to have more than 500 rushing attempts this season. So if Sermon stays healthy, he's going to get a big chunk of those. I love it. And to me, that just brings me to the running back strength of schedule sheet here, where we show the San Francisco 49ers is having by far the best strength of schedule for the best strength of schedule as far as running backs goes. They get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of their, of their 16 games that we'll be playing in the fantasy football regular season this year versus what we have pegged as top eight fantasy opponents for opposing running backs. And that starts out with two top eight projected opponents at Detroit and at Philadelphia. Your thoughts on Trey Sermon? We're getting him a bunch in the seventh and eighth round of these drafts. I prefer him to Raheem Mostert given that price. What do you think? The San Francisco 49ers, the best strength of schedule for opposing running backs. And I should also say, if you look at the and it's a good – you guys, if you're enjoying this content, go to rosterwatch.com, get a pro membership, find all this stuff. Alan puts up so many videos a week. I'm working my ass off on these tools. We have great content from Ani Sridhar and from Trash Man and all the rest. You can check it all out here. You can get these tools pulled up right in front of you and use them. But San Francisco is right at the very top of the sheet here. Also at the very top of the game script tool sheet, where I just basically take the opponent's projected win totals by Las Vegas and measure out how many wins are on the schedule versus these players. Generally, the teams that are the top of that with the fewest number of wins that they're facing, the fewest number of projected wins they're facing, are teams that have shown in the past to be in good game scripts for opposing running backs. So we not only have the game script stuff going forth, and I know that the two things go together in certain ways, right? Game script is taken into the matchup tool, but we do have him at the very top of both of these lists is the San Francisco 49ers. It's driven me to get a whole lot of Trey Sermon.
Yeah, I love this chart that you make, the color codes. It just makes it so easy to read. And obviously San Francisco pops off the list. Yeah, I mean, enjoy drafting Trey Sermon in the seventh, eighth round because you know where he's headed, right? He's headed into the fifth round. I'm gonna make a non-bold prediction that I'm gonna give it about the first time he breaks a runoff in camp that he goes into the fifth round, and for good reason. We already know what San Francisco's gonna do. Trey Sermon's gonna probably have 6 or 7 weeks where he finishes as a top 20, top 15 RB. He's gonna have a handful of weeks where he's just a handful of touches, and then there's gonna be a handful of weeks where there's some fourth running back we haven't even heard of yet that's gonna be projected to be the starter. So you're not going to get a 17-game stretch out of Trey Sermon, but when he plays, he's going to be projected as a top 15 pick. I love taking him in, you know, where he's going now, and I would still take him in the fifth, sixth round.